You're listening to another great show from the Nod Network. Find more great content at nerdod.com.
This is Heroes Needed, the Overwatch Players Podcast.
This is Heroes Needed, the Overwatch Players Podcast. I'm Dave.
And I'm Richard.
And we're back now with an episode, and we've got a few things to cover that go as such. We're going to talk a little bit about the UK in the Overwatch World Cup. Mm. We want to talk about the changes that are coming to Torbjörn, Everyone's favorite Swedish tinkerer. We're going to talk a bit about one of the arcade modes as well, the arcade mode called No Limits, and also a hero type, which is quite a wide topic. But we're going to talk about tanks specifically with a few points about them today. So let's start off talking about the Overwatch World Cup. So we mentioned in the last episode how we hadn't quite seen as much as we would have liked. I had the pleasure today of looking at some of the highlights from the UK-France game from last night. And spoilers to those who haven't watched it.
Including me.
Including Richard. But France was victorious over the UK in what looked to be quite a hard-fought game, but France came out.
You've got to give them one.
And I mean, the upside is they're both going to the finals at BlizzCon. Yeah. So France have got the number one seed, UK number two, so it's okay. They're still going through from their group anyway. So it's going to be quite the matchup at the end. And although the timings were better for this group, they still weren't really ideal. I mean, I think the France-UK game was sort of 5 or 5:30 yesterday, which is better than most of them have been, but it still wasn't ideal for the middle of the afternoon, I guess, which is a real shame.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I've been in work for the past few days and we've been, you know, I've been really rather busy, so these kind of times sound great on paper, and then you have the practicalities of working and trying to get home and trying to figure out how you're going to watch it, etc., and it doesn't really work out. But it does mean that I can go back and probably watch all of the stage, which I might actually do because it involves the UK.
Yeah. I mean, like we said in the last episode, not being in the app means that it's a little... You have to kind of wade through the Twitch website.
A lot more friction.
And find it there.
To get it.
Yeah. But, you know, well played to France. UK come out fighting in the next one. Because, again, they finished second behind France, but they still did really well. So that was great.
So how do you think that kind of game, though, compared, in your opinion, having seen it, to league play? Was there a difference? Was there a distinction?
Do you know what I think I saw? From the elements that I saw of it, there seemed to be more, like, big play moments. Mm. You know, like, a lot of the Overwatch League games, there were... the fights were kind of... a fight would go one way, and then the next fight would go the next way. Mm. It wasn't as often you saw those, like, big, like, huge multi-kill diva bombs, or massive earth shatters that related in a team kill. Like, they weren't as common. When they happened, they were huge and they were cool, but they seemed to be a little bit fewer and further between. Mm. Whereas in the highlights that I saw, and granted I was watching highlights, you will see the best parts, but there were a lot of big moments, you know, big sort of 3-4K diva bombs, you know, huge ultimates that relate to, you know, just wiping of enemy teams. Mm. It did seem a bit like it was a bit more frenetic, a bit more people showing they've got something to prove, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe that ends up having, you know, more exciting Overwatch, but it definitely felt a bit more like the league plays a little more considered, a little bit more that the pace is kind of structured, I guess. Whereas in the World Cup games, it's been very much a case of, all right, go in there, use your ult, smash the opponents, let's just do, make something happen.
Yeah.
Which I think is... It's a weird comparison to that kind of measured and almost delicate kind of play where it's all kind of balancing different plays and different ultimates here and there, whereas it seemed a bit more like, you've got one, all right, use it, let's make something happen.
I wonder what causes that, though. I wonder if, obviously, like with the League, with Overwatch League, there's obviously a lot more on the line. Your ultimate boss, you know, your boss's boss, however this team structure is, has paid 20 to 60 million to get a spot. So I guess there's a lot more on the line in that sense if they want results. So I guess that's why it would be more considered. And in terms of the sheer number of games they play, obviously the league, they were playing for the majority of the year. There's a lot of games to play.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's that element with the World Cup. They seem to kind of go hard for a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
But the big one that stuck out to me when I was thinking about it just then is... these are players who are all from the same country. Yes, there is language that is a factor there, because they all speak the same language, presumably. They're all from the same country, I would imagine so. But also, they all have the same cultural touchstones. Now, I don't think that's only about TV and film or like something that, that's unique to their country. But surely that makes communication easier if you're not having to go between English and Korean, and it's one of those as a second language for you, and you are coming from maybe a different frame of reference. What do you think to that? Do you reckon it is just that added cohesion?
Maybe so, yeah, I guess, because you figure if you're spending a bit less time thinking about the way to phrase or say something, and more time just shouting out what you're going to do, you can make those things happen quickly. And I think you're right as well, because of the idea of how short that space time is for the World Cup, that it is a case of you want to make an impression quickly.
Yeah,
you know, you figure players who are on the in the league already and on teams have that expectation that they want to keep their jobs and they want to play well to show that. Players who perhaps aren't in teams yet and have aspirations to be league players maybe want to set their stall out and make a scene, and they're trying those sort of big flashy moves to achieve that end.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we've seen with all of the transfers and people being released and people changing roles and all that kind of stuff is that while they have contracts for so many years, while they have so many assurances, it's not guaranteed that they will still have their job in between seasons or even throughout the league. I think that's one of the things that keeps these people kind of fresh and hungry with it. They're not superstars yet who are assured that they're going to be there for 5 years if they so choose. It is hard fought to keep a job. And I guess going into the World Cup and seeing just how many talented young people there are playing that, God, that made me sound old, Ben. Talented youngsters. No. These talented other players that are out there who can do it just as well as you and maybe better, I guess that kind of lights a fire under if you are a league player with one of those coveted spots.
Yeah. Well, from the point we touched on a couple episodes ago, if you're a player, you know, for instance, the quality of Shadowburn and the Fusion, and there's no place for you in that team, if you're a player who's coming up and wants to join that league, you've already got some established, incredible players that you have to set yourself against, I guess, in a competition for roles and for a spot on a team.
Yeah.
So you've got to play hard and play fast to get seen, and to get that kind of recognition.
And then maybe one of my favorite themes, which I keep bringing up, this kind of contrast of Overwatch versus traditional sports. People often talk about, or at least in films that I've seen, again, I don't watch many sports, but in that kind of archetypal story, that stereotypical example, they show them maybe watching lots of footage of particular players or of particular moves. This is a thing where we have all of the footage of all of the different player angles. If you want to know if you're as good as a player in an environment like that, you can start at least by watching every one of their games, by seeing how they perform. And actually, if you are able to adapt to that and their strategies and maybe incorporate some, maybe find workarounds for others, see how much better you perform. Yeah, you're not playing on a stage in front of people, but you're at least seeing how you stack up to them. And I guess that, you know, that encourages younger players who want to get there to go, right, that's how good I need to be. I can do that.
And it's also correct something because you figure if someone is watching the film and watching the footage or watching the streams, a lot of these players were streamers before they were professional.
Yeah, of course.
So you figure not only do they have all the footage from games they've played in the league or in the World Cup, but they've probably also got footage from games they've played even before that, just when they were playing recreationally to try and work their way up the rankings. So you've got even more. If you want to know a player, you want to know him in and out. Like, for instance, a player, Seagull, who recently retired from the league to go back to streaming because he has such a huge fan base as a streamer. That's a huge wealth of information about that player, even before he went into the league. And, you know, and for his own reasons, the idea of, it, although it might seem strange from the outside to say, okay, you're giving up the opportunity to be a professional player to do that, I imagine the way these streams are set up, there's quite a loyal fan base.
Yeah.
It can be quite lucrative, and I suppose you can play your own way, I guess.
Yeah, he's kind of gambling in a sense. He's making a calculated risk in the sense of the league for him, I guess, represents a sure thing. Mm-hmm. You will earn this much or thereabouts, maybe some more. You'll have these many perks. Whereas streaming for him maybe could be, this is a chance at something bigger, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I could make that same bet myself in his shoes, but hey, I'm a different person.
It's a very bold statement as well to retire from the league after one season. And you're like, this guy's like, what, 22 or something?
Might drop retired after a single season.
Yeah.
Might drop, and you're out. No, I mean, in terms of that, you've got all this historical footage. Yes, we don't see the team's practice games. Obviously, they're not streamed in that way, but their individual streams are. So it's almost as if you could follow, say, a football player through every single practice round as they're running drills and observe their progress. And yes, you aren't that person, they are going to do things differently to you, etc. But if you can learn from somebody else's mistakes, you're not waiting for them to share an anecdote with you, which may never happen in the case of a professional athlete. You may never be in the same room as them, but if you can see where they struggled with something, and actually, like you say, through these hours of footage, see how they got around it or how their style's adapted, that's got to be a place of inspiration for these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's... I'm still very much looking forward to the end result of the World Cup and what that means for the league. Yeah. I mean, we spoke about the sheer number of teams that are going to be next season, the difference that's going to make, and
yeah,
how it's really going to shake things up. So,
definitely.
Very exciting to see. Good luck to Team UK for the finals. Although the French were pretty strong, so we will see.
I mean, they've got to be strong at something.
Hey, Poco plays for that team, man.
That is true. I do love the French. I do joke with them, but I do love them. So the next thing we're going to talk about was the tour pre-work.
Yeah, so yeah, moving on from nations of the world, and let's focus on Sweden.
Sweden.
And particularly Sweden. This particular Swede, Torbjörn Lindholm, and his rework.
The best Swede.
Yeah, well, you know, you got Birgitta now. You got
I'm not going to back that claim up. I'm just going to throw it out there and then move on.
Loyal Torb fan.
Yeah.
No, it's the rework that's come out now, much, you know, sort of following on from Sombra's rework that really kind of changed her up, made her a far more a playable character in more situations.
Now looking to rework as well.
As of course, yeah, Symmetra. Yeah, some big changes to those heroes, and now we're looking at something, you know, similar to Torbjörn. Liked and loathed in equal measure, I think, because of the way his abilities work at the minute.
Yeah.
And the idea of seeing whether those are going to change up significantly now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, liked and loathed, to put it nicely, I've heard it described as a troll pick sometimes when people pick Tor, particularly on attack. Yeah, it's a real tricky one. I mean, the current system always felt a little bit janky, I think is the right word.
Mm.
You know, you currently kind of, or people currently throw a turret down, try and level it up, they have to wait with it while they level it up, they have to run and try and find scrap, they can toss out armor packs, but it's, you know, it does a bit of healing, or not healing, but it gives them a little bit of armor in a situation, which is very, very useful, don't get me wrong, but that's all it does, it's a little bit, it's not a huge amount. You compare that to Birgitta, for example, and it's nowhere near.
Yeah.
Although it can affect more people. You've then got these kind of, not weak, but not great primary and secondary fire. You know, you underestimate them at your own peril, but they do have these kind of odd curves where they kind of not just drop off in damage, but literally fall. If
yeah,
you fire on straight, it does kind of fall. So there's a weird thing with aiming in there as well. There's not really another hero like him. These turrets can, depending on your perspective and what team you're on, obviously, either be annoying little things that you kind of have to place all the time, or they can be these death-dealing turrets that come out of nowhere. But that depends on how good the player is, of course. And then he has an ultimate that's really, really cool, where suddenly the turrets are amazingly powerful and he's storming around the map and you can kind of see him coming because he's glowing molten orange. But at the same time, it feels like a very weird character. It's not one that I've played much. I've played a little bit of Mystery Heroes, a little bit when I got the game, but it's not one that I would go back to.
No.
Until maybe this rework.
It's a hero where there are a few... I consider Overwatch to be a very, very well-balanced game. I know so much work goes in to make this game balance.
Hmm.
But only every once in a while do I get the feeling that Torbjörn's not particularly balanced. And that's so... But again, I say that whilst also knowing that, yes, of course he is. Because, as you mentioned, his weapon has a very significant drop-off, a very like an arc, I guess, that you don't see with a lot of other characters. With
only
the exception
really
of maybe,
comes, though, I guess.
Yeah, and again, that's an, you know, that's all to do with the power of the shot. Whereas,
it makes sense. It's a bow and arrow
exactly,
rather than a gun.
But then you think about, obviously, his secondary fire, which is that kind of short-range sort of shotgun blast, which can be quite damaging. But then the turrets themselves, the turrets are the part that I feel is overpowered.
Mm.
But when you take it as a package of his overall abilities, it does make sense. But the idea that a Torbjörn turret can, you know, in two or three hits, kill your standard DPS hero, you know, it can smash down your shields, it can really, really, quite quickly whittle down a tank hero even.
Yeah.
And it's quite a hardy thing to take out. You know, a full-powered Widowmaker shot, you still needed two or three of those to take out a level 3 turret.
Sure.
And that time, or in that time rather, the turret has sighted on you 100% accuracy and is hitting you every time.
It's kind of so, auto-aim, auto-aim
yeah.
kind of thing.
And it's really quite hard work to beat.
Definitely.
But then every once in a while, it can feel like the right thing in those situations.
Yeah, and you know, I think, not to put words in Blizzard's mouth, but I think that they realized that some heroes are going to be better, obviously, on different maps, on different compositions, on different things, but I think that they want every hero to be a hero that somebody could play on attack or defense on each different map, and at least be useful. If you really, really like a certain hero, yes, I think Jeff said a couple of times, I may be mistaken, but I think he said a couple of times, about not wanting people to be a one trick, not wanting people to just play one hero all the time, to mix things up. It has such a big cast of heroes that you can play multiple heroes. That's the idea behind it. But if you are a devoted Torbjorn fan, and you want to be able to play him, and people are, you know, being toxic, which they absolutely should not be, they're, you know, screaming at you or being offensive in the chat, which again, they should not be. But if somebody's doing that just because you're playing Torbjorn on attack, or you're playing on a certain map that they disagree with that, and that's quite a large percentage of people, potentially, that's not a very fun experience. So I think this redresses that balance and makes him more useful as a damage dealer, as well as that. Even then, I was going to say obvious pick for defense, but even then, I feel like people now go to Symmetra for that kind of defensive positioning. I feel like Torbjorn's kind of dropped off from that after the Symmetra rework. So I guess it's pulling him back to his status on defense and maybe making him possible on attack.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the number of times I've seen a Torbjorn turret sitting at the front of a payload covered by an Orisa shield or a Reinhardt shield and just being, ugh. Like, I had a game once where there was a Bastion in turret mode.
Just going to mention Bastion. Yeah. I was going to say, why not put a Bastion on the payload?
Bastion on the payload and a Torbjorn turret with an Orisa shield and a Reinhardt shield. And it was just, everything about it was completely fair. But I didn't feel it.
That payload is moving at that stage. It's not a question of if it's moving. It's moving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's hard to stop that payload.
Yeah.
So speaking of the rework then, speaking about the details of what's being changed. So, as you mentioned, as it stands right now, he's not the fastest character.
Yep.
He's got that single-shot primary fire with the arc.
Yep.
He's got the short-range shotgun-type ability.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his turrets, which start at level 1, get leveled to level 2, the scrap and the armor packs.
They have to gather scrap as you're going around the map.
Yep, and then you've got the ultimate Molten Core.
Yeah.
Now, the changes that they're making...
We should say the ultimate at the moment. Obviously, the ultimate Molten Core, it levels up the turrets from a level 2, which is the max you can get normally, to a level 3.
Yep.
So more powerful. Torbjorn gets a speed increase. He can run around. He screams out his famous line of screaming Molten Core.
Yeah.
And then he does more damage as well. That's kind of his current ability set.
Yeah. And that's the hero where... I think that I've only ever used that ability, his ultimate ability, to get that turret killing more things.
Yeah.
Because I'm not, you know, with that arc, with the fact that he's not the most mobile, I don't do a lot of damage with Torbjorn. And I think this is probably the case for a lot of Torbjorn players.
Yeah.
You do most of your damage through that turret.
Sure.
So the thing is, you put that in a good location, you supercharge it with Molten Core. That's killing heroes in a couple of shots.
Exactly.
Like, unshielded, unarmored heroes are getting killed in 2 shots.
Yeah, the squishies, the DPS heroes that are down.
You know, a Mercy flies through, she's going down.
Yeah.
A Tracer can't recall, she's going. Those kind of things. So those heroes are going to take it out quickly. But now, they're thinking about changing that around, so it's going to be... I think they've mentioned it's going to be a bit more attacking focused.
Pretty significantly. So they've mentioned changes to his gun, but they've not said what those changes will be. We do know that he will deal more damage, so it will be more effective when you are shooting at people. But there's more to come still on that. His previous ultimate, I think this is probably the biggest one for me, the current Molten Core will now just be his ultimate ability. He will just be able to pop that, and I'm guessing it'll be on a long cooldown, kind of like Mercy's Res.
Yeah.
But he will just be able to pop Molten Core a lot more regularly in the map, in the game, sorry, and be able to run around a lot quicker. It increases speed, it increases damage again. It should boost turrets, I think. No, it doesn't boost turrets. I think it's just the damage and the running, essentially.
Yeah.
They said something about wanting to do something with the mechanical arm that he's got as well, some kind of added ability, but they've not quite revealed that yet. The big one as well is that all turrets are now level 2. When Torb throws them, there's no level 1 that needs to be powered up. You throw a turret, and you can throw it now. You don't have to place it. It can actually go up a little bit. So they reckon this should allow him to reach a lot more areas where you couldn't previously put a turret, because he can kind of throw it slightly more vertically, which is good.
That's what we need. Torbjorn turrets in more difficult locations.
Exactly.
Yeah, thanks, Blizzard.
I don't think he's, like, frisbeeing them onto the top of buildings, but you could definitely kind of chuck them up a little bit is the idea. But yeah, definitely this should make it more tricky to find them and to get rid of them. But they're all now level 2. There's no more level 1s. There are now a lot more offensive right from the off. And then while the ultimate will still be called Molten Core, it has a different thing that it does. Now, this is maybe one of the best fan reactions that I've seen in recent times, because they immediately came up with a much, much better name for it, which is Molten Floor, because what the new Molten Core does is allow him to fire out blobs of molten metal that bounce off walls, that hit other stuff until they reach the floor, and then they just expand as this little pool of molten metal, and they stay there for quite a while. They damage any hero that goes into them, so you've got an area of effect kind of thing going on, some kind of crowd control stuff as well, obviously be able to block off certain areas with molten metal that's lining the floors. But the other thing here is that this does increase damage to the armor of heroes that have armor. So who's that targeting? Well, Torbjorn's kind of now becoming the anti-tank.
Yeah.
Very deliberately. He's able to do all this damage, throw out turrets which can auto-track targets, so he doesn't have to get anywhere near the tank, potentially, but he can distract them and do quite a lot of damage by putting a turret that will shoot in their direction, while potentially other heroes flank, or he tries to flank, or whatever might be going on. He can block off the actual control point, potentially, with molten metal, or set up other clever ways of funneling people round, if he's clever with how he uses that molten core ability.
And it's quite nice as well, you mentioned that, because it's sort of, if that ability feels like an answer to Wrecking Ball's minefield.
Yeah.
Because Wrecking Ball can also close off an area, but he needs to be in the center of that to release those mines where it's going to be. Whereas if Torbjorn has the option to fire that into a location,
yeah,
gives him more flexibility to do a similar kind of thing.
It's a great shout, absolutely. And again, potentially a little bit more static in that way, whereas those mines can either be quite densely packed or quite spread out. This is very much I pointed there and it went there. It's very much more aimed in that way. So more focused, I should say. But it's a really, really impressive ultimate. I can't wait to play. I think it's just hit the PTR, but it's going to be an interesting one. It will make me pick up Torbjorn for a little bit at least to try.
Yeah. I think what you said before is right about the idea of it feeling or that we're kind of a troll pick. And it reminded me of a game, a league game in which, and I'm not proud to say it, but it was a fusion, and they were winning quite significantly. I think it was against Shanghai Dragons, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, Shanghai.
Kick him on the down.
I know. But in which Team UK's very own Boombox is on the comm saying, can I go Torb now?
Yeah.
And it was on Watchpoint Gibraltar, and it was just... The thing is, again, all of these plays are 100% legal and well within the rules of the game.
Yep.
But they basically put a shield on a Torb turret in the doorway as the payload approaches that corner at the first point.
Yeah.
So and they had it held so tightly they couldn't get around to flank the turret. They had to go around the front of the turret.
Yeah.
But the turret was level 2 and had a shield in front of it.
Yeah.
So it was very hard to get through. And it was just such a strong defense, but in a way that you didn't see a lot of Torb picked in the league. For that very reason,
it's valid,
when they chose it, it was a bit.
It's
dirty.
Valid, but it feels cheap.
Yeah,
it's not illegal. It's not bad. It's not wrong. It just feels cheap. It feels like you're winning something that you shouldn't be winning.
Yeah,
because not that it didn't take skill, but it didn't take as much skill as some of the other great plays that we've seen.
Yeah, and this was map 4.
Yeah,
they'd already taken the first 3. They'd won the game overall. It was an unnecessary map, I suppose, if you think of it that way.
Yeah,
but it did feel a bit wrong. And again, Boombox, if you're listening, maybe you are. I don't feel bad about you doing it, but in the moment it felt a bit like that's a bit dirty,
exactly.
You know. But.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing. I think, again, to go back to it, I think that's what Blizzard wants for all of their heroes, is for anything they're doing to go, yeah, that's a cool thing that I can do. I think that's the ultimate, you know, that's the ultimate idea of what should happen with a hero in a game, is you should do something and everyone kind of goes, that was cool, like you did a cool thing, rather than just something that you go, yeah, but you didn't really do anything. You didn't really have any skill.
Yeah. And maybe the Torb turrets, you can feel... You can be guilty of that.
You're handing off your job as a player to kill the enemy team. And I know that's not the ultimate goal of Overwatch,
no.
Unless you're playing the team deathmatch mode, which is a late addition and very much relegated to the arcade. But you're kind of getting rid of your obligation to kill the enemy team through skill by giving it to a literal robot that will shoot people for you.
Yeah, and letting the AI, which never misses,
exactly,
do the job. And although it can be fun at times, it doesn't always feel
good. It doesn't feel as good as, you know, popping a headshot with a Widow or doing something very clever with McCree where you know, dive around a corner, fire, roll, fire, that kind of stuff. It doesn't feel as good as that does. And I think this is their chance to redress that balance, make it more fun.
Good. So many more games of playing Torbjorn.
Yeah.
So then on to a game type which I've only really dabbled in recently. And that's the arcade game type, No Limits.
Yeah.
A game type which is, again, for a game as finely balanced as Overwatch, I feel as if the developers one day were just like, whatever. Like, just whatever you want to do. And they invented a game type which allowed you to pick any hero as many times as you want and just go to town. And I think it's a really nice example of, like you mentioned with Team Deathmatch, it's a mode they put in, which is not really in the spirit of how the game is played, so it's just a thing in the arcade. You can play if you want it.
Yep.
Where, and the same goes for No Limits. Like, the idea is you're meant to create a balanced team to fight another balanced team.
Yep.
Whereas in No Limits, you can do whatever you want. And it's for some very strange results.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I feel like it's kind of, you know, the expression, the inmates running the asylum.
Yes.
I kind of feel like this is what it was. I feel like people were just going, we want to do this, we want to do this. And they eventually put it in. And it makes the game more well-rounded. That's the idea. People may love the lore and the ideas behind it, the narrative stuff that we get, the comics that we get. They may love the look and feel of the game, but maybe for whatever reason that team-based dynamic isn't as much what they want, and they want more fun game modes like Team Deathmatch, like this kind of mode, and like things like Mystery Heroes, and so they just want to play rather than have it be a sport. We talk a lot about the league. Maybe they don't want it to be that kind of very competitive thing. They just want to have some fun in it, and that's a totally valid reason to buy the game. It also kind of feels like the developers just wanted to blow off some steam.
Yeah.
Maybe they'd worked really, really hard. I'm sure they always work really, really hard. But maybe they've been pushing something and they just kind of went, this is a fun goof.
Yeah.
We can just goof around with this. We can play this while playtesting it, checking the heroes and the abilities, but just having some fun, and kind of went, maybe we could ship this. I can see that being the case, basically. Yeah. I can see that being a fun thing that someone wanted to do in the office.
And as an example of the madness that is this game mode, I recently had a game where I thought, well, I'll give it a try and see what happens.
Yeah.
I think there was a loot box in it, so I thought I'd give it a go.
Always do it for the loot box. Always
worth
that.
Of course. And I wound up in a game where our team was triple Anna, triple Widowmaker.
Sounds perfectly balanced. I don't know what the problem is in any way.
I guess an opposing team of triple Anna, triple Symmetra.
Oh, goddamn.
And on Oasis. And it was probably the most insane game of Overwatch I've ever played. Because there were just sniper shots everywhere. There were turrets everywhere. It was just carnage. And it was so much fun to play.
Yeah.
In a way that totally should not have been, because nothing about either team composition was balanced at all. You know, a triple healer that's, you know, six players, snipers, like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But that's what made it fun. So the idea of playing, I believe it was the university segment of the Oasis map, and being up around the point and standing there as a Widowmaker player, next to another Widowmaker player, with an Anna and a Widowmaker across the way from us, and then throwing in, you know, three Venom Mines as they approach the point, and then just Symmetra's teleporting into the center of the point and just headshots across the map with each other, and then being flanked by an Anna who threw a biotic grenade, and then having to use Widow's Kiss and just fire randomly in her direction and put her off.
Chaos.
It was just nuts. It was nuts. But it was a really fun example of a way to play the game where you can't take it seriously, and you can't get frustrated with it, because it's just nuts, you know, and it's meant to be. You know, I once saw a game where the opposing team was playing six Mercies. And I must say, it was one of the weirdest games ever.
Yep.
Because they were playing triple attacking Mercy.
Yep.
And then triple damage boosting Mercy.
Oh, jeez.
Or rather, they had two boosting damage and one healing.
Yeah.
So you just had Mercy with her blaster just firing in all directions, but damage boosted.
Twice.
So it was basically a really strong DPS Mercy, whilst also having the healing and the res capabilities. You figure six resurrections in short, so, you know, you can't beat that. You might roll in there with a half a dozen tanks. These Mercies are probably still going to best you, because even if you knock one down, they're just going to get resed. And it's just that, you know, that kind of what the hell game mode.
Yeah.
Is something that I think really, really adds to that. And in a future episode, we'll come to the Total Mayhem mode, which is another example of what the hell gameplay that I think just makes it so much more. And if you're out there and you haven't played No Limits, play it, but don't pick a hero until everyone else has. Because the reason why I ended up playing Widow in that particular game is because we had two Annas and two Widows, and there was someone who was playing Widow continually spamming the choosing Widow button, saying, pick Widow, pick Widow, pick Widow. And so I did. And the idea of triple Widowmaker is just nuts.
Yeah.
And you should definitely play that if you get a chance.
It is absolutely insane. And at the same time, though, I can see an interesting parallel to other games. There's quite a few other games, FPSs, that kind of stuff, that have a snipers-only mode.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of stuff that we've seen in the League and stuff I've seen myself, of when you get in that 1v1 Widow duel, and you are just looking for it. These maps are so beautifully crafted. They have such great sight lines. And you know that there's an enemy Widow down there, and you're just trying to step around the corner and see ahead and pull the trigger and line it up. Because that is an immensely satisfying feeling. Being able to pop a Widow headshot, yes. Being able to pop a Widow headshot on another Widow, that is amazing. You will feel robbed if you miss it.
I had one of those recently. I was playing Numbani, and we were attacking her from the final point. Mm. And I knew that there was an enemy Widow. And I knew that she was firing right across the point.
Yep.
So I went around the side, and as I went around the side, I saw that she was aiming directly ahead of me, like, to my right. Sighted in fully. Like, she didn't know I was there.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is my moment.
Yeah.
And I cannot miss this shot. Because if I do, she will get me.
Yep.
And I just sighted in, and I took perhaps a little bit longer than I should have.
Yeah.
But I was like, I need to get it right.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. Spot on. And I got her, and I thought, I bet she must be so upset right now. Because whoever's playing her, because they were really popping off against my team. And I just went, no. And just
you get that flank for whatever reason. Yeah. You approach them in a way they don't expect, and you can just nail it.
And I'm pretty sure it was a Mystery Heroes game as well.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't normally play Widow on that map.
Yeah.
And it was the idea that they were definitely building up an Infrasight. Like, that was definitely happening. And I think I put a stop to it.
Ruined it.
And it felt great.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So moving away from Mystery Heroes to kind of our, I think we've both said before on numerous occasions, our preferred hero.
Yeah.
Let's talk about tanks. Because I think that it's very easy to talk about the game modes and the League and everything else, but to get away from the actual heroes themselves.
Mm.
And I think that we're both avid tank players. With perhaps slightly different styles. Because like I say, from the last episode I mentioned that I'd seen you play some D.Va, and it saddened me because you were a better D.Va player than I was. But I think we have different styles of that.
Yeah.
But I know that all you've played D.Va quite religiously as your tank of choice.
Sure.
And I kind of branched out to some other main tank options. But I think it's quite nice to talk about, A, our favorite tank, which is, as we know, but kind of why we play it, and also what other tanks we want to try and play, I guess.
Yeah.
Or play styles we've developed.
Yeah, I mean, tanks for me as a category give some of the most interesting play styles of any of the different heroes. If we look at most of the attacking heroes first, just to contrast it, a lot of them are the same. Well, not the same, but a lot of them are quite similar. They're very much DPS. They have a gun. You shoot the gun. That's what you do. We have some cool abilities like Tracer's ability to obviously like warp around and to recall as well. But fundamentally, you're shooting people. That's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're somebody like D.Va, one of my favorites, you've got two different weapons. So right off the bat, with double the number of options that you've got, you can shoot these weaker little cannons, and you've got missiles in there as well. That immediately is enough to get my interest. And then you've got the ability to use a shield and the ability to boost. So you're immediately more mobile. You've got twice as many shooting options, and you can shield for a little bit. That's immediately got me. I play quite a bit of Roadhog as well sometimes, and that gives me, again, two methods of fire. One gun, but two methods of fire, short range and a long range. That's more interesting to me. And for him, it's the ability to heal. Now, he can self-heal, and when he does that, what he does is take a breather ability. He kind of pops a little vial to his breathing mask, and it gives him recovers health, and it also reduces the amount of damage that he takes. Both that ability and D.Va's ability to boost away give me more playtime. If I'm a DPSer and I run in and I get caught in an odd situation, I'm dead.
Yeah.
That can happen almost immediately. You turn the wrong corner, there's two heroes, you go down a bad alley in a bad neighbourhood.
Yeah.
You turn the wrong corner and it completely changes. You just get destroyed by a team. And obviously that comes down to ability. I would never say that I'm an amazing player or anything. I wouldn't lord my own abilities there. But there are certain situations that no one can avoid.
Yeah.
If you're a tank like a D.Va, you can boost out of the way, and chances are you'll get out of the way. If you're a Roadhog, again, you can use that take a breather and hook somebody to pull them out of position. There's lots of stuff that you can do. It gives you options.
Yeah, definitely.
It's also the fact as well that in addition to just having the staying power to actually stay in the fight for longer, which is important to me, you're also the backbone of that team. You have people around you. You have healers healing you. You have DPS weakening targets and moving to forwards into new advanced positions, but you're moving the payload. You're playing such a core role in that team that's something that really, really resonates. I really, really enjoy doing that. It's something that brings me happiness.
Yeah, and I can echo that, because I think that I have had my time playing DPS heroes, and every once in a while I'll have a good game, maybe, but they'll never be my number one.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I very much want to get in the fight and stay in the fight.
Yeah.
And I think there are certain heroes that you can do that with if you play the game well. Like, you know, Tracer, I think, is a great hero, but I too many times have I poorly timed a recall and just gone. You know, absolutely. 150 HP in a game of Overwatch is not a lot of hit points. So it's really a case of, yeah, you do wind up in that wrong situation, and if you don't recall in time, you're gone.
Yeah.
Same with, you know, a character like McCree, you know, 200 HP on McCree, but again, it's not that, you know, you get hooked by a Roadhog and headshot, you're gone.
Exactly.
You play a hero like D.Va with a 600 HP, and that eject ability, which I think is an absolutely incredible mechanic, where you go from a mech to a separate DPS hero, basically.
Gives you a second chance.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites.
That's huge. You know, you got someone like Roadhog, again, with about 600 HP, and then you go to my current preferred tank, which is Reinhardt, with his 500 HP, but that barrier shield that he has, who's a hero, and it's weird because I started playing the game, and I think if you listen to the first episode of this, I'm talking about how much I'm playing D.Va all the time.
Yeah.
Now, I play Reinhardt far more. And it's, my playstyle has moved from that extra mobile, you know, that kind of, especially a tank hero that can move around like that, to a tank hero that is much slower, doesn't have the range, really, of the rockets and things like that, but has that shield, and is much more a defensive hero for the rest of the team.
Yeah.
And I think that that's changed my playstyle in that I'm far less likely to go off and be a lone wolf hero, you know? Like, I'll stay with my team, I'll stay with the payload. You know, if I have a if I have DPS heroes moving up, I'll make sure I get the shield up so they can fire from behind my shield and do the damage that needs to be done. And it's really changed the way I play and made me a far more considered player. But it's that idea of a character like Reinhardt. You have that ability for the fire strike. You have that long range shot with like a, I think it's like an 8-second cooldown. You have that charge ability. So if you do really want to get in the mix, you can.
Stop rolling, start scrapping.
Yeah, and if you do time it well and you aim it right, you know, you can kill a DPS or a support hero by charging him into a wall or another object. And that combined with them being able to swing that hammer and then throw your shield up to keep, you know, buy yourself some more time while your team follows up. It can be hard to get it right. And the number of times I've charged in, thought, I've got this, put my shield up just for a DPS hero to run on the back of my shield and blow me up. Too many times for me to count. But when it goes right, and you get in there, and maybe you drop an Earth Shatter, and you pin a couple of heroes, and you can do some amazing things with
devastating
that.
Devastating ability, Earth Shatter. Sorry, devastating ultimate.
Yeah.
Just incredible.
But then you combine, you sort of compare that with heroes like Orisa. And I was saying to you earlier before that when I started off, I played Orisa quite a bit, and I really enjoyed her abilities and the shield and the weaponry, and I just still feel that's a great hero.
Yeah.
But I can't play her anymore. Like, I tried recently, and I'm just not a very effective Orisa player. And it's so odd that my playstyle has changed so much that this hero that I was quite comfortable with, now when I play, I think, oh, I'm not doing great here. And it's weird how that will change around.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I think the great thing about this is as reworks come, you know, D.Va got a rework that added missiles. She didn't have that originally. That's a fairly recent change in the grand scheme of things. But as these reworks come, as these changes come, as these balance changes come and so on, it can shift somebody's playstyle. And obviously the amount of time that you then invest playing in a certain hero does move you in those different ways. But it's good there because you'll find that you'll go round one way and then you'll come back on down to that same hero and then back off to another one. What I want to maybe shift the conversation to now then is which tank don't you play? Because I know which one it is for me, and I know which I think is maybe one of the weakest tanks, and one of the ones I think actually probably needs a bit of a rework. But I'd be interested, who do you not play as a tank?
I think that the tank I will never choose is Zarya.
Interesting, right.
Because it's a very different kind of tank hero, with a different kind of weapon, and a different kind of shielding abilities. And I think that she's a great hero, but I can never really play her. And I feel like things like the cooldown times on those shields and only having 400 hit points compared to 500 or 600 from the tanks means that of the tanks, I feel that she's the squishiest, you know, which is odd considering her story that she is one of the strongest in the whole world. It's definitely a hero where whenever it's very rare that I'll ever have a good game as Zarya.
Sure.
And generally only in mystery heroes because I don't play her in quick player or comp very often, or ever actually. But that's probably the one tank hero that I can't really... not that I don't enjoy playing, but that I don't really have the mechanical skill to play well.
Yeah.
And I think that training that is something that I would never give the time to.
Fair, fair. No, I mean, in terms of Zarya, just to reflect on that for a minute, I think the thing that got me to play her more was I was getting killed by her quite a bit as D.Va originally, and I found ways to deal with that now, and I know when to back off and when to go in for the kill and that kind of stuff. I've learned that. But I think I got a cool skin for it, just to be blunt, in the loot box. I think I got a cool, the Siberian skin.
Oh, cool, okay.
The robot-looking one, basically. And I think I got the 80s one as well, actually. I got kind of lucky in a couple of loot boxes. And that was kind of like I should probably play this hero. I've got some cool skins. So I've actually kind of come around on Zarya. I still don't play him much, but occasionally, if it seems like the right tool for the job, maybe somebody else has picked D.Va, you need that extra tank, and you're actually, yeah, I'll go with that. The one I was going to suggest, actually, as being one of the ones maybe in need of a bit of rework, was Winston.
Yeah.
He's needed it for a while, and I saw a parallel there between Torbjorn and Winston. Some people like Winston. I've seen Winston, the time I've been playing Overwatch, go from one that no one ever picked because it wasn't very effective to being a great tank to pick with dive comps and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And now it seems to be back into a bit of a lull of not seeing Winston as much. Maybe for those dive comps, maybe for certain scenarios, maybe more in the league than in regular play, just because obviously they really know what they're doing. But it kind of feels like you've got this hero that can dive in, that can smack down, that's got a shield and this lightning cannon, but the lightning cannon's not very good. It doesn't do a tremendous amount of damage, which it shouldn't do, but it doesn't do enough. It doesn't feel that they've quite found what's right with that.
Yeah.
The shield is cool, but it does isolate, obviously, to a certain area, so it's only in certain scenarios where it's massively useful. And it kind of feels like he can obviously leap forward, but then is immediately on his own without really much of a way to defend himself. And when you have heroes like Doomfist, where he can jump forward and cause damage when he lands, Winston, I think, knocks back a little bit, but it's not much. That seems like that's ripe for a bit of a rework. Maybe a slightly longer jump range, maybe more damage when he impacts. I don't know how you'd fit this in mechanically, but it would be so cool if he could in some way hang off buildings.
Yeah.
Kind of like Hanzo's running up a wall ability, or Genji's running up a wall ability. But almost the ability, I'm thinking Temple of Anubis with those pillars.
Yeah,
he
sure.
Jump from pillar to pillar. Like, if he hits a wall, it resets his jump ability or something, like an actual ape. That would be amazingly cool and lend itself to more mobility for dive. But just something's not quite right. Maybe an alternate fire. But then we have a lot of heroes like Zarya that have some kind of grenade.
Yeah.
But maybe there's something in there that doesn't quite sit right with how much damage he outputs. Like, it didn't sit right with D.Va just having those turrets. They added the missiles.
Yeah.
It feels very similar. He's the other high mobility tank, and he doesn't have the same kind of kit that D.Va has.
Yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned, because I did go through a phase of playing quite a lot of Winston.
Mm.
And I think that it was sort of when I was interested in how the dive comp worked, and if someone else was playing D.Va, I would just switch to Winston, and then just for that ability to kind of make space or to have that sudden diving moment, sort of on control maps especially, the idea of making something happen by just diving onto the point and dropping a shield and then just attacking anybody around me.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is that you very often don't live very long unless you're playing a very coordinated team.
Exactly.
But if you are, you can really make a change, and you can make a difference.
Absolutely.
But you're right. I think that it's the tricky thing is what to change.
Yeah.
If you figure that the leap ability kind of fits in with his character, makes sense as a giant engineered ape. He's probably able to leap quite far.
Exactly.
Primal Rage, I think, makes sense.
I think it's very cool.
It's a very cool to me, definitely. It's very hard to stop a Primal Rage Winston. The shield, it being a static thing. But at the same time, I kind of like that it is in that way, and the fact that it's a 360 sphere as well.
Yeah.
You often see it employed on that bridge on Watch Point Gibraltar, just outside of the point, and it goes all the way around that, which is quite useful. The Tesla cannon, I think, is the only trick is if you increase. I was thinking when you said that, my first thought was, well, make it a single beam, make it more damage in a concentrated beam.
Yeah.
But then that's Zarya's weapon,
exactly.
So you can't really do that.
The scattering mechanic, but I wonder if there's some way for it to maybe chain between enemies.
Yeah.
Or maybe if, not to copy Roadhog's ability, but if he had some kind of healing mechanism, like pulling out a banana.
Yeah.
Blizzard loves strategic humor, maybe throw in something like that where you can just heal a little bit.
Jar of peanut butter.
Something else. Yeah, exactly. Just something else added to give him that extra attack or give him that balancer, basically, the extra attack or the extra defense.
You're right, though.
Something else to his weapon or something to heal him.
Because if we look at, and again, to go back to League play, if we look at League play from the very first stage, there's a lot of dive, there's a lot of D.Va Winston.
Yeah.
As the sort of League season moved on, we saw a lot more Roadhog, we saw a lot more Zarya, we saw a lot more standard Reinhardt. D.Va was always still in there as well for most teams.
Because she's the best hero.
Well, of course, clearly. But Winston did really taper off.
Yeah.
And you had people playing, you know, people like Roadhog or, you know, in defensive maps, Orisa and things. So you didn't see a lot of Winston being played. So yeah, maybe a rework. And I suppose with their work rate at the minute, the rework on Symmetra and Sombra and now Torbjorn, perhaps we'll see that. Because they're working on the heroes that have been there the longest.
Absolutely.
And Winston's been there since day one, so...
Absolutely. You know, I think Winston's in a similar position to where Torbjorn was. Rather than, or even Sombra, rather than being in the position of, say, Symmetra.
Mm.
Symmetra, broken is a harsh word.
Yeah.
But she felt a little bit broken. She just wasn't being played. Whereas Torbjorn is. Winston is, but both of them weren't being played very much.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the state he's in now. He just needs some little tweaking that someone smarter than me can figure out. But that tweak will give him back a lot of that play, I think. Maybe it's just a meta shift. Maybe that's all it is. Maybe it's a small buff and a nerf here and there, and it'll swing the other way. But I think a little minor rework would be in order.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
Almost like Hanzo's arrows. Changing that scatter arrow. That, in the grand scheme of things, is a small rework. It's one ability. But actually, it makes quite a big difference to how that hero is played.
Yeah, definitely. Cool, so I think that brings us to the end of this episode.
Yeah.
If you've got any suggestions on your favorite heroes, what you think about the tanks, what you think about the Torbjorn rework, or anything else, or if you want to just talk trash about a nation in the World Cup, reach out on Heroes Needed Pod on Twitter, or via the NerdOD social pages too. But yeah, until then, until next time, I'm Dave.
And I'm Richard.
And we'll see you later.
More heroes.